Can you conceive of anything that doesn't have a beginning? Welcome again to The Good Word. I'm Brant Bergelin, your host and study guide author this quarter, and we're continuing our 13-week series on biblical interpretation, how to study the Bible and understand it. My conversation partners this quarter are Dr. Dave Thomas and Dr. Carl Kozart, my colleagues at the School of Theology here in Walla Walla. And I'm wondering about this idea of beginnings. Can you imagine, Dave and Carl, anything that doesn't have a beginning?
Well, it's pretty hard to do. I mean, I suppose in my wildest imaginings I can, but the problem is that we are tied to time, and so you're asking me to think of something that is a line that extends to no point of beginning, which is kind of hard for me to do.
How about you, Carl?
No, I can't. I mean, the beginning kind of gives you a sense of direction, of context, of understanding. And so without introduction, it's like reading a book, jumping into the third chapter, and you'd be lost. You'd be confused about actually what was taking place in that book.
How strange would it be if you were told that that story that you were jumping into had been going on forever into the past, and that you were jumping into a point in time, yes, time as measured by the story, but that story had never had a beginning. And yet, the Bible, fortunately for us, begins with a story with a beginning. In fact, it says, in the beginning, God, and the Gospel of John in the New Testament begins with the idea, in the beginning was the Word. And so the story of God and the story of Jesus appear to go back beyond the beginning, but where we're concerned, the story picks up with a start. And oftentimes you'll hear Jewish scholars and many Adventists as well say that the books of the Bible as we understand them are rooted in the beginning stories, especially of Genesis, Exodus, Leviticus, Numbers, Deuteronomy, that to think about Genesis as a foundation for how we read the Bible is fundamental to understanding the rest of the story. What parts of Genesis 1, 2, and 3 perhaps would you say are fundamental for how we understand the story of God, of our world, of our own human predicament? How is Genesis foundational to that?
I wasn't sure you're asking for which story in the first three chapters, because all of them play a key role. The fact that humans are created in the image of God gives a sense of what life, the value of life, and its purpose and its meaning. So the whole thing to me is crucial.
Well, I agree with Carl. I think all of those stories are foundational. The one in Genesis 1, I think, is very significant because it gives us a basic picture of reality of a creator's realm and a creature's realm. And it shows that they are pristine in the beginning. There's an anthropological story, talks about the origin of human beings. So we have a sense of that. And then, of course, chapter 3 talks about the disaster that came upon this perfect creation. And I think unless you have those points of reference, you do not understand the rest of the story in the Bible.
So really, then, Genesis, in that sense, is foundational to who we are as humans, what human even means, where we've come from, the purpose in our being here. And in
what
a sense,
kind of reality we dwell in.
Can you say more about that, Dave?
Yeah, that there's a domain of the creator, which we would call the supernatural realm, and then there's a domain of the creatures, which is where we dwell, the material world. And the one is unseen, the other is seen. The creator can come back and forth between the two realms, but we cannot go to where the creator is. In fact, I would argue under that picture of reality, for a creature to try and take on the prerogatives of the creator is the cardinal sin, which lends some significance to the story of Lucifer.
That there was a fall from grace because
yeah,
he saw it a place other than his own.
He did the worst thing, to try and assume, as a creature, to assume the prerogatives of the creator.
This, what you're saying, casts some doubt on, or at least calls into question, the materialistic framework that much of our society operates out of, that what I see and touch and hear and feel is all there is. There isn't anything outside of this human experience in our world.
And Brent, I'm going to jump right in on that, because that is an argument from silence. They say there is no evidence for anything beyond the natural world. And I would ask, well, what did you use to test for it? Do you have a supernatural meter of some kind that will check to see if before another non-material realm? The fact that you haven't found anything doesn't mean it's not there any more than if I told you, well, there are no unknown diseases because we haven't found any. You know, nobody would buy that.
So when I think about Genesis and I think about the beginning of our world, as the biblical account gives it, I often hear people say that Genesis 1 is intended to be a poetic picture of a creator God, and that Genesis 2 is a creation story of man that is not compatible with Genesis 1. And I don't necessarily want to get into all the issues here, but when I read about the days of creation in Genesis 1, I've heard a number of people calling into question the meaning of those words day. In other words, day in the Hebrew. And should I consider that those were, I use the word literal here, but those were days made up of time that I would understand, and that the seventh day, the Sabbath of God's rest after creation is a meaningful one. And I'm not interested. When I read the Hebrew and I see the Hebrew word yom for day, I see it used in three different ways in Genesis 1 and 2. And the first way that I see it used is it describes a literal day or a day of creation that includes both an evening and a morning, our way of thinking of perhaps in our day, we divide it up into 24 hours. That's not necessarily the way the biblical text is arguing it, but that a day is one cycle of the earth turning, basically. But then I also see the word yom being used in the creation of the sun, moon, and stars. And the word yom is used as a reference of a part of a day that's opposite of that which is dark. In other words, it's the light part of the day. There is the day and there is the night. And then I see in chapter 2, I believe it's verse 4, it says, in the day when God created the heavens and the earth, and he uses the same word there, yom, as the whole time of creation. It uses yom, the word day, as an entire body of time in which God created. How are these ideas of the word day helpful or confusing for us in understanding creation?
Well, I mean, you know, there is a figurative meaning to the word day. If I tell you that'll be a day, that'll be the day. I can't think of another one in the moment here, but you're revealing the problem with trying to have literal translation of things, right? Because
yes,
if you've ever seen a literal translation from Hebrew or Greek into English, the English doesn't read very well at all. And so you have to get the sense of this. But I would raise a question about the 24-hour day, is that I've always wondered how having a longer day helps you any. So let's say a day equals 1,000 years. How does that help you in view of the arguments that the universe is billions of years old? It doesn't help you at all. I would say that if I believe in a supernatural God, such as is described in Genesis 1, that I don't think that 1,000 days is going to enable him any more than one day.
I've wondered sometimes if the arguments about the days of creation is an attempt to allow for the apparent scientific explanation of evolution to fit into vast periods of time. And when I read through the book Patriarchs and Prophets, Ellen White has an interesting phrase about this, and I want to read it briefly, and maybe you gentlemen would be willing to comment on it. But she says, the assumption that the events of the first week, that is of creation week, required thousands upon thousands of years strikes directly at the foundation of the fourth commandment. It represents the Creator as commanding men to observe the week of literal days in commemoration of vast, indefinite periods. This is unlike his method of dealing with his creatures. It makes definite and obscure that indefinite and obscure that which he has made very plain. It is infidelity in its most insidious and hence most dangerous form. Its real character is so disguised that it is held and taught by many who profess to believe the Bible. This is a fairly direct statement, and I remember when I was a young pastor, I had been doing quite a bit of study on origins and earth science, and was pretty convinced that there were a lot of holes in the creation theory, but I was also pretty convinced there were a lot of holes in evolution. And I remember reading this, and it says, "It is infidelity in the most insidious and hence most dangerous form to believe that one day of creation could actually be thousands and thousands of years of time." And it got me a little concerned about the direction I was thinking. And yet I know that there are honest scholars and scientists who ask the question of what to do with creation science and origins. How do I reconcile this if I'm not sure that creation was done in, you know, Dave, 24-hour days or days, meaning something a little longer, but you're saying that you don't see it gets anybody really off the hook.
Well, to me, Brent, what's interesting is that people spend a lot of time debating about the word days. I think the bigger problem is the phrase heavens and the heavens. You know, what do we mean by that? The whole universe or just the atmosphere around the earth? That, to me, is a much bigger question. But the truth of the matter is that there's no way to answer your... We all answer the question based on other considerations.
Mm-hmm. Okay?
So if you believe in a supernatural God, then a 24-hour, 7-day week is not a problem to you. Okay? If you don't believe in a sovereign God, then you, or if you want to give science a chief sway, then you've got other issues. Now, I do think the gap theory is an interesting one. It suggests that the matter of the universe may have been made who knows when. But the creation story is focused primarily on the creation of life. And you notice that it does say that the earth was without form and void. It doesn't say in the Bible God created everything on that day.
At least,
by the way, we misunderstand the discussion about ex nihilo. I don't know if we get to talk about that, but that's a very interesting debate.
That God created everything out of nothing.
Yeah, the Bible never says that.
Yeah. Carl, how about your thoughts on creation here? Can you add to our discussion a bit?
Well, I mean, I think certainly, as Dave said, it's the perspective you have. And so I think there are people who are out there who are open and honest and struggle. Questions have been raised about the creation account. And so I tend to want to give them the benefit of the doubt in the same way that all the disciples had a hard time believing in the resurrection at first. I think we can be patient with those who have real questions.
Mm-hmm.
But the question is are we really seeking answers? Are we open to discovering the God of the Old Testament? Because he is the creator God, and that really shapes our entire way we look at reality today.
It does. Now, Dave, earlier, our time's running out, but earlier you mentioned that Genesis 3 is vital in our way of thinking about the world in which we live as a broken one. Would either of you like to comment on Genesis 3 and its our understanding of anthropology?
Well, I would just say quickly, Brent, that every worldview I've ever looked at, and I looked at quite a few of them, they all hold to the position that there's something wrong with the human circumstance, that things are not the way they were or the way they should be. So how do we get there? Genesis 3 is the biblical answer to that.
And the biblical answer is that man has walked away from the counsels of a good, loving God, and the results have extended to our day. Our time is about...
That does not make humans despicable, however. There's a mistake on that one.
We have our brokenness, but fortunately, we're still of value.
Yes.
Still created in the image of God. Well, our time's about up. I want to say thank you to my colleagues, Dave Thomas and Carl Kozar, for your time. And thank you for listening each week, your faithfulness for the good word.
You've been listening to Good Word, a production of the School of Theology at Walla Walla University. Thanks for listening, and we'll be here next week at this time with Good Word.